I think that's really a great reputation to have. I think personally that is the reputation of this show. We strive for it. We work for it. That's our reputation. We need to stay on brand. And our brand is we have no way to stay on topic. It is unfucking possible. It's incorrect, and it's we are irreverently against it.
I think of topics more as suggestions.
Discussion points.
Guidelines.
Guidelines. Yeah, it's guidelines, you know. But still, I'm looking at chat, and already you people are obnoxious. All two.
Yeah.
The peanut gallery is in full swing.
Peanut gallery is in full swing. So we just have to say that there may be a lot of cats today because Terry is not kidding at all about there being cats everywhere because he's got way too many of them. Maybe he doesn't have enough. Yes, Brett, we supposedly have topics. Did you look at the title of the show? Huh? No, I didn't either. Howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Dead Robot Society. I am Paul E. Cooley. Joining me, as always, is Veronica Jaguar and Terry Mixon, and apparently one of Terry's cats. That's Leo. Okay. I'm sure we will see. Yeah, you come all day for the cats. That's what everybody says. I'm sure we'll see more of them later. But there's
one,
just
one cat.
Chunk, chunk, chunk.
Uh-huh. Which one of you put the coffee monster in the Discord? Was that you, Terry?
I think I did.
Coffee monster looks at the coffee monster. Thank you for that. I laughed really, really hard. That was really, really good. I love that. What are we doing here?
You're talking about cats, but you were distracted from topics. So
topics, cats. Small talk. How the hell are you, V?
Busy. But good. Playing teenager Jenga in the house at the moment because we've got one child who's moving back after finals are done next week. And the kids aren't babies anymore. So we've been trying to get some new mattresses in for them and trying to get three teenagers to clean their rooms really is a multi-week process. And I don't function well in chaos. So and every time they find something that they're not sure if they should keep or not, it gets put in my office. So what you can't see below the camera is this like
pile,
several piles of office supplies, crafting supplies, their coloring books, and there's, you know, just cat toys kind of littered around.
Coloring books?
Like mindfulness coloring books.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, hang on. Oh, so there's some that they have that are more appropriate than others. I have the
okay, yeah, I did see those at the
adult comic stuff.
The
adult coloring books.
That's it. You know, when you need to meditate on some
profanity
to feel better while you're using, you know, bright shiny colors.
That's mindfulness. Okay, well, it's good to know.
You know. That was one. For those listening, it's brightly colored and it says, you are fucking adorable. And I am.
Because that's
so
true.
So I like those affirmations. But yeah, but they have some that are more child friendly. But they're piled up on the
floor. Are boring.
Child-friendly or boring. Got flowers and mandalas and shit. I don't need that. Give me all the swear words. So yeah, that's been my week.
Well, Terry, what about you?
I've been busy, productive. The novel's up to around 75,000 words out of my 116 target.
Woohoo.
Of course, I end up cutting it. It'll be closer to 100,000 words by the time I do my editing pass and trim things back.
Make sure you haven't duplicated names.
I just usually find that I've got, it's amazing how cutting a word here and there will make such a difference. And maybe the occasional sentence that may be duplicative. It's apparently I'm a little too verbose for myself when I'm dictating and I have to go back in and trim out the things that I think, what are you doing? Stop that.
I think what I was
saying. Or moments like that that get caught.
I'd have to cut out all the
Sassy and the kittens are upstairs with the boys today, and she was trying to chew on a cable. I saw her down there. But next week or two is going to be very exciting for me, because starting today, after the show is over, I'm going to start moving the bookcases out and start cleaning the floor. And next week we order the Calyx stuff that I'm going to replace them with, have them delivered, and we're going to have folks come out and actually put them together.
Nice.
Then once I do that, the wall furniture for the cats goes up.
Oh boy.
So that's the next couple of weeks for me. And it's going to be nothing but chaos.
So you're telling me that that next week when we peer in on you, we're going to see like everything under construction.
I believe so. I believe that is indeed the case.
Oh my God.
I'm not only writing the book that I'm writing for the series, the Last Hunter series, I'm still slowly putting out chapters for book 15 in the Empire series on my Patreon. It's only been like a chapter a week, but I found the time to make that happen amongst everything else. So it is happening, just very slowly.
Yay! Glad to hear that. Very glad to hear that. Let's see, what the hell have I been up to? Been a long week in the hospital and worrying about other stuff, but things are looking up again, so hopefully I can get back to it. I did write some more on Proxima Tombs. I'm at this interesting point again where I can't decide if I'm tipping my hand too early or if I need to tip it this early in order to do the things I want to do later. And keep the audience guessing how it's going to work out.
If you tip your hand now, are you going to have, you know, something bigger to surprise them with later on?
Yeah.
Then you're not tipping your hand too early.
It's tipping a hand. There's going to be a problem. I've set so many things up so fast that I'm just sitting there going, maybe I may need to slow this down, but that will happen when we get to the action, which is very, very soon. Because right now it's all this spaceship shit. You know, you got to prep everything. Everybody's just discombobulated and figuring out everything. You got to get all that shit down.
You know, that's actually a really good place to dive into what our topic is, because isn't trying to figure out all the setup one of the easy places to say too much, to cover things that maybe don't need to be covered?
Hell yeah.
Of course.
What else is set up for?
How do you know when you've said too much? How do you know when you've said too little? That's a question.
That's a good question.
You don't,
I was
you
waiting
don't have
for
an
me
answer.
To answer
I
it.
Think, well, I mean, that I struggle to find the right amount of, you know, backstory to bring in and then how to kind of like sprinkle it through. And then, you know, if I'm working on a series, what do I hold on to until I absolutely have to let it, you know, let the reader know? And I think some of it's just getting comfortable with the idea that it's okay for your characters to know certain things that the reader doesn't, and the reader doesn't have to know them just yet.
Right. I look at it this way. If I try and use the Terry Mixon, which is if I'm bored, chances are this needs to go. But then there are times where you're like, intentionally slowing it down, you have to make that decision as if you're slowing it down the right way. And sometimes slowing it down could be simply just changing topics for about 1500 words or something like that. It doesn't have to be a 3500 word excursion. So it's, I think that with time you get a little better about figuring out what needs to be kept and what needs to be tossed. And really, I think it depends on, does it affect the story? Does it affect how the story moves? Does it give the reader information? Does it further develop the character or the setting? If those are the cases, then you might need it. If it doesn't do any of those things, it's ripe for cutting.
The way that I keep on hand to slow things down if it's going too fast is side plots. No, I'm being absolutely
No,
serious.
No. You're absolutely correct. Yeah. You're absolutely correct. My brain just remembered that I only have one main character here again. So this is the third story I've written where I've got a really close narrator with nothing exterior. And I don't know how to start those side plots yet, but keep going. That was good.
I've got four characters that I'm currently writing in this novel. I've decided that's the sweet spot for me. Four character point of view characters. Three is too little, five is too many. So I try to make it so that I have four points of view characters going on in any story that I'm writing at this point. And when things look like they're going just a little bit too hot in one thing, I have the other plot lines because the side characters are working on their own things.
Uh-oh,
they're doing their own plots.
You said that word.
Which word?
Side characters. We'll get to that in a minute. Mm.
Having the secondary characters able to do stuff and being able to switch between the main plot lines and the secondary plot lines does help me control the pacing of the novel.
Mm-hmm. That's what I like the best about having multiple characters, even though I may just have one main, but if I have POVs where I can jump in, there's a lot more things you can do to slow down or change that pacing or give moments of levity you wouldn't otherwise have. But if you got a single narrator or close narration, it gets a little bit more difficult to do that without having your character go down those subplots, which I guess is what I'm going to have to do for the time being. So we'll see how I get to that, but we're still really early. I'm only like 11,000, 12,000 words in, so I haven't decided how I'm going to handle it yet. But it did spur more ideas and more time for me, or more things for me to write down in my notebook, if nothing else. But there's also the crap you got to tell the readers who are coming fresh to the series, right? You got to catch up on exactly what the hell is going on, or some of the backstory, or reveal it in that first area without it being an info dump so that they can at least catch on to what's happening. Cause these characters have been around for six books. So, I've got them fully developed, but we have to give some of their history because those things are going to come up and you got to have some idea what they were. So that's how I'm handling it. But yeah, subplots are a good point. And I have plenty of opportunities to do that disconnected from the characters actually. Which would be even funnier.
I'm watching the chat and just kind of enjoying myself.
So am I. I've seen all sorts of things like this. What the hell was that? Oh, that was Top.
We have somebody named Alice Noob that's dropped in that found me via The Last Hunter. So that makes me feel happy. So welcome.
Yeah. And as for it being an audiobook, I narrate it, so you can listen to me narrate Terry's work for
both Empire of Bones and Imperial Marines.
But Humanity Unlimited. So I think there's 14
Empire books.
Yeah, 14 Empire books and four Humanity Unlimited.
Far too many. That's what there is. Far too many.
I was doing counting in my head. I'm somewhere close to 40 novels at this point, either written or co-written.
Aren't you special?
I may have made it.
Oh, you think?
I might have.
Yeah, I think you made it.
Maybe.
I think you made it to 15.
Where is the line when you've made it to being a professional writer? When did that happen? Somebody said 10 books, so I think I may have made it.
Yeah, if it's 10 books, you've made it. I made it a long time ago, but yeah, I don't know. It kind of depends on how you look at it. It's really, really difficult to quantify too, because are you looking at it from a standpoint of, is there an amount of money that you have to make a month to have made it? Are there a number of sales you have to have? Are there a number of reviews you have to have? How are you quantifying that? That's a really complex question. There is no simple answer to that.
Yeah, there's not. Where I got the 10 book thing is Dean Wesley Smith was told a story of where he was just starting out writing back in the 70s. And a friend of his owned a bookstore and he had published a few books, or he'd published more than 10. And he was asking the guy, he says, I just don't know where to say that I'm a professional writer. And the guy said, have you published books out there? Yeah. More than 10? Yeah. Then I'd think you're there.
Way I used to look at it is I just wanted to reach a point where I was paying my mortgage every month. But that was back when I had a day job. Now the level of success, I have a long way to go to get kind of back to where I was. So, but it's happening. Slowly.
Coffee money?
Coffee money, more than coffee money. Right now it's mortgage and hopefully fund for a car, because at some point we're going to need a second one. This sharing a car shit just needs to stop. But regardless of all of that, to a certain degree, I look at when I look at my Libsyn stats for the podcast, and when I look at the comments I get, I look at the patrons I've got and everything else. I've already feel like I've been a success for a couple of years, even in my darkest moments, compared to a lot of folks out there. Probably most of them, in fact, are doing kind of well. So success is just something you have to kind of keep reaching for and never be satisfied with where you are. Just keep going upwards. But every once in a while, you got to say, you know what? I kind of done a good thing, even if it doesn't feel like it. I kind of made it somewhere. I have to look back and say, I've come a long way. Still a long way to go.
Then you owe the IRS tons of money. And you become grateful that they have payment plans.
I don't think I'm in danger of that, Terry, anytime soon, but that'll all be interested to see if that's a good problem to have.
It's success. It's not a destination. It's just a series of benchmarks.
Yeah.
Or cats.
Or cats.
Miss Cleo says hi.
I was like, why?
Why is it being held? I don't want it.
Yeah. Success is self-defined. Very good point. So it's always difficult to tell somebody, you know, they're like, are you making money at it? What does that mean? You know, are you making a living at it? What the fuck does that even mean?
People write for all kinds of reasons, and money is only one of them.
Yeah.
But that is far off topic. Get back to it. How do you know you're writing too much? How do you know you're writing too little?
I know that at least with the stuff that I'm co-authoring, the benchmark, I like that word today, for a finished chapter, like I know that I have finished a chapter when it's 20 pages and we're writing in Google Docs. So 20 pages, 6,000 words-ish in there, that's a chapter. And I know where stuff has to happen from the beginning to the end. But that tends to flow a little more easily because, yeah, there's an outline and there's another person coming behind me with more writing experience, making sure that stuff is balanced. So if the setting is not as fleshed out, then she'll go in and add a couple things. Sorry, Terry is getting, for those listening, Terry is currently getting groomed by one of his many overlords. Evidently, he needs to be styled.
That one tuft of hair needs to be moved.
Excuse me, this is not good. I must fix this. Yes, now I will sit here. I will contemplate my best.
So you've got a peer basically taking a look at what you've got and also making a decision into what to keep.
It's yes and no. There's so much outlining that happens beforehand that there's very little that goes into what gets deleted, but it's more of what needs to add. And part of that I think part of that comes from experience. I will move things too quickly when I'm writing, and I won't pause to take time to adequately describe the setting or to give enough, I guess, let the scene breathe before I try to get to the end of what has to have happened in the scene. And it seems to work out really well in that. I mean, that story itself, like what you were describing, Paul, it's for the most part, one point of view character, relatively closed third person. And there's not a lot of room for other characters to chime in on storylines, but there are other side plots that can be explored. And so you can...
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, so you can go from, we're going to tackle the big problem to, oh, and by the way, did you know about this? We have to deal with this issue right now. So it's the let's prep for the next, you know, mission where we've got to go and, you know, save these people to, so at this meeting, you need to know the rules about making coffee. Let's go over those now before you walk in that meeting and embarrass the crap out of yourself.
Wait a minute. The rules to make coffee. Are we going back to, you know, quarter share where we have to describe how to make coffee?
No, this is more like how you sneak your coffee into a setting where only tea is usually allowed. And how to do it so you're not late to the meeting.
So one of the things you were talking about is description, which brings me back to a question that I asked earlier. How do you know you've written too much or too little? Because I've been told both that, well, I've hardly been told that I write too much description. I've been told a few times that I write too little, mainly by Veronica, but still, nevertheless, you know...
That is only when it comes to your characters. And that's just because you've said you like to let the reader form an idea of who the character is in their head. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I describe the way they move. I describe... Jesus
now
Christ.
You're just being problematic, Terry.
For those of you on YouTube, you just saw Terry incite a feline altercation.
Poor Leo has been abused.
He's been kicked out of his seat.
He's now over in the cat bed going, why am I off there? And she says, I's the baby. I gets to be a purr. She's a troublemaker. She only got out of isolation a couple of days ago, so she has been causing trouble. She's a bully, a little bully.
As she perches on your shoulder.
She is one of my two shoulder cats. So, yeah, there is that.
She of the floofy tail.
Antoine, stop that. Leo got Beto.
Dad, stop. Okay, I'm pretty competitive.
You can get to know characters by the way they move, the way they talk, the timbre of their voice, certain things that they do, tics, things like that. Those are descriptive things that you can add without saying, the color of his skin was that of a tanned leather hide. You know, okay, if you're doing that with every character, you may have a problem.
Right.
You should do that if it's a particularly stunning feature of that character, which is going to make people wonder why they got it. Like if they've got a gait where one leg drags a little. There's a story there about why that leg drags. That's an interesting thing that readers might pick up on and go, I wonder if that's going to ever be talked about. Or some scar that you know that's running down the side of their cheek. You wonder how it got there, and it better be important that it's there. Dean says, so when you write Brandon Sanderson, length, is that too long?
Yes.
We're not talking about the war.
Absolutely too long.
It depends on if it takes you that long to tell the story appropriately in the style that you're telling. Is it really too long?
Derelict took 4 books, Terry. 365,000 words. Did I write too many?
Do you think you did? Do your readers think you did? That's the only judgment that matters.
Well, I don't think I did. If anything,
me being snarky about Brandon Sanderson is not actually a thing because I don't read Brandon Sanderson. So
I know.
My opinion is irrelevant.
I'm attacking your irrelevant generalization. That's what I'm attacking. I think that if you've got scenes that you don't need, they should be in places where you're trying to give the readers rest and should have a point as a resting place. There should be something silly or something out of the ordinary that happens if you're going to do one of those little interludes, or maybe show us something the characters can't see, depending on what kind of story you're writing.
I know that I've looked at the length of some of his audiobooks, and when I saw one of them was 55 hours,
must be the way it came. I see those and I just go, wow, for one Audible credit, I can spend half my life listening to this audiobook.
You know, somebody looked at Audible. There's like this one that has like 100 plus hours of book. I don't even know what it is, but I'm like,
probably who has the Bible?
It was not the Bible.
It was not the Bible.
It was not the Bible. It was something else, maybe about the Roman civilization. I'm not sure, but it was very long. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot of commitment for 100 plus hours.
It is. I mean, segue or side note. I mean, a lot of people, the reason that they don't go into audiobook narration or they don't stick with it is because it's not a lot of return for the time that gets put into it compared to other VO stuff. Because, you know, for a 10-hour book, I'm probably spending...
That's a full work week, minimum.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm not editing. So, but yeah, it's probably 20, 25 hours in the booth, but then there's also the admin time around it. And even if I'm not editing, I'm still uploading those files to, you know, the engineer and the proofer so that they can go through things. So, but to be able to sit there and maintain that headspace and that voice for, you know, a couple hours at a time, I can't do it for more than...
What, you can't use your voice 8 hours a day? What's wrong with you? What a wimp. What a wimp. I can talk for 16 hours straight and have no problems whatsoever with my voice.
Good for you.
I can't even get
it is two. Not. Yeah. It's... Yeah.
It's an instrument. It's an instrument, and you can't... And, you know, it's just like writing. I can't write for more than a few hours at a time before my brain goes... Bleh. I have to take a break and go do something else. And if I come back, I come back. But mm-hmm. if I've done like 2,000 words or something like that for the day, I don't feel like I have to come back unless I want to come back. Cause I've blown my brain out. So I need to take a walk. I need to go play a stupid video game. I need to watch a dumb movie. And then maybe later that night, I'll look at it and go, you know what? I really want to finish that chapter, or I've got an idea for the next chapter, or I should just go screw around with the story and see what happens. So I take a lot of pressure off myself to try and make sure I leave time for that kind of thing, even in the writing. But the audiobook production, you can hear my voice right now. It's pretty rough. You have to pick and choose when you can record. And there's sometimes you cannot record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So... Which is kind of a problem when most of your Patreon is consists of people who want to hear you've narrate your work.
Darn you for being all popular and stuff.
Ah, yeah, well, not everybody can live the Paul E. Cooley life. Actually,
not everyone would want to.
Nobody wants this life. Trust me.
Wow.
Back to too many words.
So, looking at this. It says that the Charles Dickens collection of 10 novels at 264 hours is the longest Audible audiobook right now. And this was
who
written,
recorded it?
I have no idea.
Wow. Wow. I couldn't stand reading that much Dickens. There's no way. No flipping way.
Doing Neil that Nicholson English? And Bob Newfield.
Don't know him.
Maybe old recordings too.
200 and some odd hours. That's a lot of commitment.
I live the possum life. That's right. That's right.
Wake up late, scream into the void, eat trash, play dead. Yeah.
Is that possum or is that, you know, raccoon?
That's
and speaking of possums playing dead, one of my neighbors told me that I had a dead possum behind my shed on the fence line we share, and I went and checked, and it was indeed a deceased possum.
Oh.
That was a smelly experience.
Oh, did you call it the CSI?
Would not recommend. One star.
One star.
We've not had possums before. This was years ago, before they developed the lot behind us, and obviously before we put up our fence, there was a family of cats living on that lot, and the mama cat must have been trying to teach her kittens to hunt, because every so often I would find squirrel carcasses right on the edge, and
Yummy. Yeah
it was like, oh, you're going back over into the lot, that's not gonna be on my property. See, I was like, what is this? Oh, where's the rest of Oh.
That was somebody's dinner.
Clearly, many mighty hunters were trained. So.
That's not just the nature of life. You know, what else are you going to do? Then Terry, right. On the other hand, he was raised by wolves. So, you know, his eating habits, they're a little questionable. His socialization, definitely questionable. So,
you know, you're not very wrong with that.
I know, that's the sad part.
I was raised, most of my growing up time was spent 20 miles outside of a town of about 10,000 people, 2 miles down a dirt road. I did not get socialized as a child.
Uphill, downhill, both ways.
Carrying a baritone saxophone both ways. True story.
No wonder he's so weird, V. No wonder. It all makes sense now.
I was a drummer in the first early years of middle school band, so...
I played trumpet for 9 years.
Sweet. We got a really nerdy trio.
Oh, well, you know, you might be right about this, Dean. Dean says, hang on, I thought Terry was raised by cats. That is quite possible.
Well, I've been socialized by cats, that's for sure.
That much is very apparent. I've had dinner with you. I can just, and actually, I shared a room with you at a con. So, yeah, I can say definitely raised by cats.
I got to tell you, you're not supposed to talk about what happened in Vegas. We had a deal.
Well, I told you to go into the bathroom to bathe, not on your bed.
Hey, it's not my fault you have problems licking yourself.
That would be you, Bubba. I have no problems. I'm flexible.
Oh.
What the fuck are we talking about?
I was nowhere near this. I have my own room on the other side of the hotel. Thank you very much. Anyway. yeah, what, where are we?
Terry, why don't you put more description in?
You figure out when you're done with a scene, like this. When are you done with it? When have you said too much? When have you not said enough?
Yeah.
I stopped worrying about when I've said too much or too little. I just really have. I have my own style of writing, and if it's problematic, one of the editing people is going to tell me that it's problematic. And I'll take that criticism and I'll run with it. But nobody's complained after 40 novels, not very seriously. So I'm just going to accept that it's fine. I found my tempo.
That's what I have beta readers for. And hopefully they catch stuff like that. Like, dude, you need to cut this 15,000 words. It doesn't go anywhere. Okay.
Yeah, when you have your character's monologue, that's a problem.
Please don't ever have your character's dialogue like a goddamn 80s cartoon villain. Please don't do that.
Unless they're supposed to be.
Unless
and it's the genre.
Unless it's camp, in which case, go crazy. It's supposed to be that way. Just do it Goldfinger style. No, I expect you to die. I don't have to explain shit. I'm just going to kill you.
I did have the opportunity to write that once, to have a monologuing villain who just really wanted to monologue and argue in, what was it? It was in a stadium of like 50,000 people, and he had poisoned everybody. And
mustache twirling and all.
He had no mustache to twirl, but it was great because I got to do like a page and a half of pseudoscience speak on, the different theories on how mutations jump generations and what you have to account for and all this. And then the stuff started to wear off. And as the stuff started to wear off, the super eloquent, hero with his mutation being suppressed, he became very eloquent and reverted back to who he was originally, kind of like a Hulk sort of thing.
Hulk become eloquent.
Hulk dialogue.
Hulk talked about
Hulk talk evil plan.
No. Hulk talked about why evil plan was going to fail, at like a doctoral thesis, and then he started to falter. And the evil guy goes, "Wait, I'm sorry. What did you say?" And the guy goes, "Chug say you are in big trouble." Scene. And actually, back into the, when you said too much, I need to take a break. At that point, we actually did stop that scene and go to another character's point of view in the same area. So you had the suspense of, oh my gosh, what happens next? What really bad thing is going to happen? But you're able to kind of slow things down and prep people for the enormous, you know, battle that would happen 1,500 words later.
Pontification.
Pontification.
Speaking of too many words. Pontif. It's what is it? It's making me wait. It's
anticipation.
I know it's anticipation. Somebody put catapate. Yeah, easy for me to say. I'm going to ignore that. Somebody put it in the Discord or rather the chat, and I can't pronounce it.
Sassy is in the hall with a toy, losing her little mind.
I can see that.
Julius was smacking her around earlier. You missed that. I saw that.
Wow. Well, we talked about the description. We talked about too many words. What about sidekicks? You brought this up.
Well, before we talk about sidekicks, one of the ways that you control the pacing of the story is when you're done writing it and you're going through the editing. I said that I end up cutting about between 10 and 15% of my word count during the editing process because I'm refining what the people are saying and I'm cutting out probably about 2,000 that's and other words that I don't need. I actually have a macro to look for certain words that I overuse. And as part of my editing process, I have it highlight them. And I go through and I trim as many of them as I can because I'm tired of using words too much. Anytime an editor mentions a word that I use too much, it goes in the list. Doesn't mean it's all going to get canceled, but it means that some of it is going to be cut out. And the editing process is the point where you go ahead and you either expand something that's going on or you trim it down. And that's where the final thing is, because when you're writing it, it's tough. When you're reading it afterwards, it's a little easier to figure out.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Well, now that you have pontificated on your pontification, you brought up sidekicks, and we've been talking about side plots. So, what's the difference between a sidekick and a secondary character?
The sidekick is the one that is glued to the primary character's side throughout the story. You've got Batman and you've got Robin. Robin by himself off doing stuff, people are like, why am I reading this? I want to read more about Batman. He's a sidekick. But side characters serve a different purpose.
Okay.
There's a little crossover between the two, so I don't want to say that they're completely separated, but somebody that is a relatively low-order secondary character can become more important, as Veronica can tell you about Carl Owlett.
Yes. I think one of the differences between sidekicks and side characters is a sidekick is often a catalyst in the changing reaction that has to happen for your main character.
Look what the Joker did to Robin. I'm going to go kick his ass.
Exactly. But Robin doesn't necessarily change through the, you know, the course of the story, unless the story is focused on, you know, him. And at what point he's a main character. Whereas a side character can have their own plot and can go through different changes and evolutions while the main character is going through changes and evolutions. And then they can be elevated in, you know, Mr. Dr. Owlett's case to main character. And yes, Brett, don't confuse them with side chicks.
Side chick.
Although, to be fair, you could have a side chick as a sidekick. Actually, no, you wouldn't want your side chick as a sidekick because she's supposed to be out of the picture.
Whoa. Stop. Hold the phone.
What?
52-year-old guy. What the fuck is a side chick?
You're going to make me explain it? Really? Really?
Have you heard of the term side piece?
Is it like a cod piece?
Remember what I said you were at the convention, 20 books? You are my writing side piece.
Yeah, I blocked that out because it brought images that were too terrifying to even just consider.
Then you already know what it is.
Okay, it's just making sure that it is known that it is a woman that's the side piece. It's a side chick.
This is sad. This is very sad.
Okay, all right, okay. I'll just let it go.
We'll talk about this later, dear.
Oh, dear, it's after dark. I get to learn something new.
Birds and the bees and the side chicks.
I don't think we need to go that far. We just need to explain the side chick thing.
It kind of goes.
That does kind of go together.
Because, you want to avoid having to have the birds and bees discussion with a side chick, because if they don't necessarily understand, there's going to be a lot of peeping later.
Moving on. Robin gets mad when people call him a
Has there ever been a female Robin?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the female Robin could be a side chick, Brett.
The one I remember, he was like in his 60s and she was in her teens. That would not go down well.
There was... I've seen some of the comics without context on Facebooks, and apparently at some point in the past, Robin went on a date with Supergirl, and things did not go well. Things went very poorly.
Do I? Sorry, I'm trying to figure out what I haven't.
Robin didn't like the fact that she dressed him up as Batman.
I don't believe it progressed that far.
The utility belt was something else entirely.
I remember that he was complaining about it to Bruce Wayne in the Batcave, and he's like saying, I told her how my parents died and all my backstory, and she's like kind of like, eh. And he says, you do realize, of course, that everyone that she ever knew, everyone died. Parents, friends, strangers, billions of people, all dead. You might be able to see why two people's death might seem a little bit low-key for what she's saying. Oh, okay, I guess so. Yeah, Robin was a little dense.
Which Robin?
Yeah, it was.
I don't know.
Doesn't sound like Grayson.
I think it may have been the one that followed Grayson. One of the ones that followed Grayson.
Hopefully it was Todd. He got killed later. It was great.
He came back as something.
They should never have brought him back. Whoa, hello. Heard that over the mic.
There's clearly a... some kitty contention going on
The kitnip is taking effect on everyone.
Oh God, no. He gave them all catnip.
I did.
Basically, while we're talking today, Terry is running a behavioral experiment on all these cats by giving them all separate metered doses of catnip to see, how it affects body weight, demeanor.
Mm-mm. I just poured out on the floor and let it all happen.
Yeah, I gave mine just Damien a little bit, and he kind of sniffed it and then promptly curled up and went to sleep.
Mine should be on the nip, but he's not. I don't know. It's hopeless. Meanwhile, Terry's writing out a novel.
I'm not. I'm seeing if I can find that particular
Batman,
that particular thing to put into the live.
If I
can find it.
Got it. I don't think I've ever written a sidekick. They're kind of annoying. I can't think of a single time I've written a sidekick.
I don't think I've written a sidekick. I've written secondary characters, but they all wind up having the capacity for change later on. Mm-hmm. So that, if if more stuff gets written afterwards, then, you know, I can pick up their plots and lines and run with them.
That's the way I think of the secondary characters. They often get POV, but it's because I need to show the audience some, or the reader something the main character can't see. And so I will hop in the head of a secondary character to make that happen. But those secondary characters do change with the story, their ideas about what's going on, whether or not they're paranoid that somebody's doing this, that, or the other, or whatnot. But they help move the story along because they're all involved in the journey that is going on for all the characters.
Right.
Terry likes side characters and secondary characters too.
I like lots of characters.
I like to create them out of thin air and then kill them in the same scene. See,
that's why you never have too many characters. You keep killing them off. You know, if you go ahead and just keep accumulating them, it works out better.
There are quite a few characters in Derelict and Soul and Beyond there, Bubba. Quite a few, and I can't kill them all fast enough. I need to work on that.
So you're saying that you're kind of like Marie Kondoing your characters? You only keep the ones that spark joy, and the ones that don't spark joy anymore, they just get killed off?
Look, sorry, not everybody survives in a war. That's just the way it is. And sometimes sacrifices have to be made. And sometimes it's because you named one of your characters off a very obnoxious author and patron. I'm thinking of J.R. Murdoch in particular. So at some point, I got to settle his hash, if you know what I mean.
I do. I was going through my outline for my solo project, and I realized that I needed a body count. And so I just started listing names of ships and people and figuring out, it's like, okay, this will work. Now, do I want them to live? Do they need to die now? Or should they die in the second explosion?
Characters, sound off. Who is still alive?
I can't kill everybody because I need an angry mob to come after people later. So some people have to survive to be part of the angry mob.
Or to incite the angry mob. Right. Got it. Get it. It's all good now. Whatever happened to Toe Tag Tom? Toe Tag Treed! Toe Tag Treed. He was in... Was he mentioned in an Ancient Trap? He might have been mentioned in an Ancient Trap. He's been mentioned in the Derelict Saga. He'll be mentioned again in the follow-up, Gravity's Bane, probably in a larger way. But he's already dead, so I can do stuff now to his corpse. Ooh, that sounded filthy.
So in a larger way, it means you're going to have more pieces of him?
Yeah, exactly. We're going to see the pre-death maybe here. But it'll be the first time he might actually have a speaking part, at least from the past. It'd be rather curious. But I am going to kill him in one of the other books that I'm working on. I've already planned how that's going to work. He keeps dying in the same universe over and over again. So I haven't decided if it's going to be a morgue setting or a murder setting or somebody just reading something out of the paper, you know, to see exactly what happened. But Thomas Reed has to show up as a corpse in every book I can possibly put him in. There are some I can't do it every time, but I try to. So that's still a thing. That's never going away. As long as he shows up as a corpse, it's all good. That's his punishment.
Punishment. Big ol' air quotes.
Yeah, big ol' air quotes. I know he loves it. I just have to come up. I just have to keep coming up with interesting ways for him to have died. And then a way to tell that story. So I sometimes stumble with that. But you know what? There's always the Darwin Awards. You go to the Darwin Awards and you get all sorts of ideas for people who do really, really not so smart things that characters could do. So, yes, Millie, you are a character in one of my books, if you'll remember. So, yeah. I've killed him multiple times. I kill them all the time. Secondary characters are awesome because they can pop in, or side characters, I should say, can pop in, get something done, and pop out. And you never see them again. You can materialize them just to see one thing and have them do, just spend a little time creating a simple backstory for them. And you can really play with it because you know this person, you're getting rid of them. You're discarding them. So you can stuff a little a couple of details in there, play with them, and then you're out. You know, they either die or they're running in terror or something along those lines, or they just the scene closes on them doing whatever they were doing.
So it's the writing equivalent of an NPC in a video game.
Yes. It's the janitor who forgets to close the one door, who forgets to lock the one door that everybody thinks is going to be locked. It's the janitor who left the bucket of water or spilled something and didn't clean it up. It's the security guard who's forgotten their pistol or their card or had it swiped by somebody. And we saw the swiping, even though we didn't know who did the swiping. Those are all opportunities to jump into somebody's brain and say, here's this thing that we need to show the reader that the main characters or the characters can't possibly know about. And we're going to drag back to that later. That's an easy way to make use of those characters, at least in suspense thriller. That's where I think I get the most use out of them is in those kinds of stories. So the other one's not so much, but I love spending a little time with somebody I know I'm going to discard, because you can make them silly. You can make them over the top because you don't have to sit around with them very long, at least not in theory. So I love them. Millie says body shaped Chekhov's guns. Yeah. Sort of, kinda.
I posted a couple of things over in the live on Discord.
Ah, the crossover event.
Is there any other kind in comic books? I should talk shit about that. Chekhov's corpse. Yeah. I did a lot of theater education and everything else, and I don't remember them ever talking about Chekhov's corpse. So Chekhov's gun, yes, but never Chekhov's corpse.
We shouldn't bring Anton Yelchin into this, all right? That's just bad taste.
Oh!
Who?
Oh! The actor who played Chekhov in the reboot movie.
The Kelvin Universe
Star Trek.
Oh, okay.
He was killed. He died, so he's got a corpse. So he's technically Chekhov's corpse.
What about Chekhov's gunman? The Chekhov gang. Hey, come and leave your guns all over the place. Uh-oh. Come on, V, spit it out.
One of the other projects that I'm working on, Chekhov has something very different, so...
Now I'm curious. I'm very curious about this.
I will not.
You're going to go ahead of Gabler on somebody? Is that what you're telling me? No, wrong Chekhov. Was that Chekhov? No, that was... God damn it, I can't remember his name now.
Some like Norwegian literary stuff.
I'm talking about plays.
I didn't get that kind of education. I just did a lot.
Apparently, neither did I. I've got my timelines, countries, and writers confused. So, what the hell do I know? Chekhov's censored. Okay, now I'm trying to figure out what the writer theory is for Chekhov's genitalia. Okay, that's where you drove this by putting that censored there. I'm glad. I hope you're happy, Tim.
Well, you just show it. Does that mean it's got to go off at the second act? I mean, that's kind of, you know.
See a doctor about that before it gets to that point, all right? When it gets up to a beach ball, it might be time to call the surgeon. Just saying.
What were we talking about?
I don't know. Secondary character, side carries. Chekhov's corpses and Chekhov's genitalia. Pick one. It's still a type of gun.
But,
I threw a third comic in there for you as well.
Well, that looks filthy.
Oh, I've seen that one.
I'll look at that at some point.
Yeah. Oh, sadly, yes, that is where my brain goes, and...
You should be ashamed of yourself, but I know you're not.
Why should I be?
You shouldn't. Not really. We have Terry for that. Terry makes us all feel shame. Right, Terry?
Pretty sure not.
No.
You sure? You sure about this?
I just stated it.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. So, what else do we have? Sidekicks. Overlords.
Cats everywhere.
I want to have a conversation about the wonderful little intervention we need to have with Terry. Because during the pre-show, we counted a bunch of cats. A few. Just a couple.
Couple.
But the damage they were doing to themselves, his hair, his shirt, his desk, his ears, his headphones, his sense of life and decency, I think that we need to put a stop to all this. He's having way too much fun at his age, and it has to stop.
So the solution is more cats.
I think the only time an intervention has to be staged is when the number of books that he's written, you know.
Look, when the number of cats you have outnumbers the books you've published, then exactly. We got a problem. That
otherwise,
you're going
I've got a lot of padding in there right now, so exactly. I'm in decent shape.
We're good.
Cat lateral damage. That's bad. Okay, Tim. Tim says, I'm pretty sure the ability to feel shame disqualifies someone from being a DRS podcast host.
Oh, I can feel shame. Dude, I've got 9 years of Catholic school. There's plenty of experience. And being, you know, working mom of three kids, shame, guilt, I got that shit cornered.
Oh, you forgot about the self-loathing. You got to get that in there, too.
Oh, yeah. Self-employed entrepreneur creative? Yeah. Shame, guilt,
I'm none of those things. Fine,
but I am an actor, and therefore I can pretend that none of it's here for like 50-some minutes.
Maybe. I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Clearly people were wondering. Shame. Whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There's a lot of folks at Catholic school here. Only 5 years of Catholic for Tim. Yep. Oh. Antoine says, Lovecraft proved with the dreams of unknown Kadath, the cats are the OG overlords. I don't think I've read that one. I read that or I've forgotten it. I think I have the book. I may have to go look for it. I actually have to do a little Lovecraftian research. I just don't know if I want to read or watch. A couple of things I need to look at. I'm not even going to talk about what the hell I'm doing, but you know, there are things that need to be done.
What would you watch? What would be like your top three references for Lovecraft?
Well, there's Lovecraft, there's Lovecraftian slash Eldritch. I would say the movie The Void is utterly fantastic for true Eldritch cosmic horror. And, of course, there's Color Out of Space with Nick Cage in it. It's on Shudder, which is a wonderful adaptation. But as far as the stories go, I just may have to crawl into something cosmic horror-y or whatnot or spark up one of those video games and let the atmosphere kind of wash over me for a little while. Because I got some stuff to do. I got stuff to do and need to spark some more ideas. And while I'm at that, I need to spend a little more time with my deep sea creatures. Well, if you have a comment about this show, you can send an email to show@debrobotsociety.com. You can find me on Mastodon at Paul_E_Cooley at VYRSE.social. You can find us on Facebook at the listeners of the Deb Robot Society Facebook group, or Terry Mangles all the radness, wrangles all the madness. You can find us on YouTube.
I personally think I mangle all the radness, yes.
You can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/DRS podcast to see our mugs and all the damned cats. Oh my God. God. And if you want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/DRS podcast and buymeacoffee.com/DRS podcast, where for as little as $1 a month, you get access to exclusive live shows like what's coming up in just a few minutes. 11 minutes to be precise will be DRS After Dark, where I get educated on side chicks. Why is this so funny? I don't understand. And if you've made the mistake of supporting us at the $10 level, you get your name read. And our $10 patrons are Tony L. Joy, Rick Shaw, Lisa Slack, Isabel Cushy, and Tim Niederreiter. Thank you to all of our wonderful patrons for making this show possible. And there's one more thing we got to take care of before we get out of here, and that is that we have a problem. We're all caffeine addicts, and we get our caffeine from CorpseCoffee.com. Visit CorpseCoffee.com. Check out their array of coffees, boutique teas, and their wonderfully weird webcomic, and tell them DRS sent you. Visit CorpseCoffee.com and get the dead in your cup. With that, we got to get out of here so that we can prepare for the DRS After Dark.
And Paul's education.
Yes, Paul's.
Do I need whiskey for this conversation? Education. Okay. We better not talk about it in the pre-show. We'll ruin it for the patrons. All right, folks. Thank you for spending the afternoon with us. We will be back here next week. So have a good one, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye. And now there's DRS After Dark. Psych.